DW Africa Link.
A warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link this Friday, November 8th, 2019. I am Mimi Mefu.
And I am Mike Loti. We are coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, as well as our partner radio stations across Africa. This show is also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, so drop us your comments. Tell us where you are listening from.
Coming up, South Sudan's unity government formation again postponed. We tell you how the uncertain political atmosphere is perceived in Juba.
We have this experience that if they fail to agree on something, then the only solution that they have is to fight.
And Gambia is heading for political showdown as the opposition calls on the president to step down. But the government says
President Barrow is not stepping down. President Barrow is continuing with his mandate to 2021.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, the world news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jane Nyingi. Thousands of people have gathered across Hong Kong to pay tribute to the university student who died after reportedly falling from a building during clashes between police and anti-government protesters. The events leading to the incident are unclear, but it's believed that Chaji Lok fell from the third floor of a car park after police fired tear gas during a protest 4 days ago. Protest leader Joshua Wong has responded to the death of the student.
We mourn together. And we urge Hong Kong people wear black t-shirts today and tomorrow to show our solidarity and unity. It's the time for the government to set up the independence investigation on the clash. We need to seek for truth and justice, and which is really insane and unreasonable for how the government allow the police attempt to murder Hong Kong people, which proved that reform the police force is a must.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has criticized Russia and China, saying the two countries pose a threat to democratic freedoms. He said Russia invades its neighbors and slays its political opponents. And Pompeo also accused China's Communist Party of using tactics to suppress its people that are similar to those of the former East Germany. He made the remarks on a visit to Germany to mark the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall.
The Chinese Communist Party is shaping a new vision of authoritarianism, one that the world has not seen for an awfully long time. The Chinese Communist Party uses tactics and methods to suppress its own people that would be horrifyingly familiar to former East Germans. The People's Liberation Army encroaches on the sovereignty of its Chinese neighbors. Today, Russia, even as we speak, uses police raids and torture against Crimean Tatars and Ukrainians who are working in opposition to Russian aggression.
Political parties in Spain are wrapping up their campaigns ahead of a general election on Sunday, the fourth in 4 years. The last round of voting in April, the Socialist Party of Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez won the largest share of the vote but fell short of a majority in parliament. Sanchez failed to form a government and he's hoping to increase his share of the vote in Sunday's election. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Zimbabwe has suspended the import of livestock and meat from neighboring South Africa after an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. Earlier this year, Zimbabwe, Botswana and the Kingdom of Eswatini jointly suspended meat imports from South Africa. And South Sudan's President Salva Kiir says the latest delay in setting up a power-sharing government is endurable. Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar on Thursday said they would need an extension of 100 days to form the unity government that had been due on November 12th. A fallout between the two in 2013 sparked a conflict that left hundreds of thousands dead. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jin Nyingi.
And you're listening to DW's Africa Link. Once more, I am Mimi Mefu.
And I am Michael Oti. And already on our Facebook page, I see that a lot of you are already listening. Thank you for joining us on this program and send us your comments. We will read them when we have time.
Certainly, Michael. Now, the November 12 deadline for the formation of the unity government in South Sudan would not happen as planned. Yesterday in Uganda, South Sudan's president and chief rebel leader agreed to delay the process by 100 days.
Citizens have been keen on what's expected to happen, considering the history of misunderstanding between the two political leaders. DW's Waki Simon Wudu sent this report from Juba.
The formation of a unity government in South Sudan is again a looming as per the requirement of a signed, revitalized peace agreement by South Sudanese warring parties. In a last-ditch effort to resolve outstanding disputes between President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, both sides decided they would form the transitional unity government in 100 days. The talks on South Sudan's political events are going on in public taxis, coffee joints, and local media. I met 34-year-old Philip Gama, a resident of Gudele, one of the populous residential areas in the capital. He shares his thoughts about the unity government.
We witnessed some meetings that has been happening here in Juba, and we've been informed through the media, like newspapers and the TV, about some of these meetings happening. But to our dismay also, that we understand parties, up to now they could not be able to agree on some issues that they have signed upon.
The peace agreement signed last September requires that all the parties, including rebel groups, are part of a unity government. However, there are still deep mistrust and disagreements between the parties as to whether it should be formed or not. To people like Gama, who grew in Khartoum after being displaced from the then Southern Sudan, war is not the way out.
We have this experience that if they fail to agree on something, then the only solution that they have is to fight.
33-year-old Sylvester Oreste, a resident of Tomping area in Juba, agrees with Gama. He says he moved his family out of Juba for fear of the unknown.
Anything that will bring for us peace is what we'll go for. But if we think that the formation of this government is being contested by the other party, we think that that might exacerbate more suffering to the people and will make people more worried. As I speak to you, there are people who are thinking of plan B, what to do if the government is formed and the other side, that is say Dr. Riek Machar, is not part of the government, as the president has said.
The parties already missed a deadline last May to form the unity government. It remains unclear if a concrete agreement can be reached after the 100 days deadline elapses.
That is DW's Simon Wake, the reporting from Juba, South Sudan. And on Facebook, we simply ask you, if regional leaders have tried and failed, how else can peace be achieved in South Sudan without negotiators?
And Ibrahim Impungu says, how many peace deals do these two need? Even the Pope prayed for them, and still, they have failed to make peace.
That is quite hilarious, Michael. And Omoya Betty says that unfortunately, Museveni is part and partial of the ongoing problems in South Sudan because he took side with the president instead of taking a neutral ground.
And an interesting comment from Chinelonum Okafor says, Yoweri Museveni hosted talks between the two leaders. Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, what else has he not seen while mining the gate as a dedicated gateman?
Nana Akusa is looking at things from a different perspective. According to him, he's ashamed of the African Union, which is using too much diplomacy. I do not know who is behind this opposition. Now, we head on to something else. ECOWAS leaders have a meeting in Niger's capital, Niamey, to address, amongst other issues, regional trade and terrorism attacks that have dogged the region for so many years.
Now, given the threat of terrorism in the sub-region, West African leaders had called for the summit to review different initiatives taken so far, as well as to redefine the priority intervention areas for the containment of these problems. Now, as regards the closure of Nigeria's borders, one of its former education ministers, Obi Ezekwesili, says it is improper.
When you look at the border situation, what needs to happen is, first, you need to have all the countries actually pursue sensible trade policies. Mm-hmm. When you pursue sensible trade policies, it takes care of some of the challenges of trade that you're trying to grapple with. And then build state capacities for your border control. Whether it's your security system for border control, or it is your customs and excise system and administration for border activities, or the institutions of regulation of quality of movement or of standards and procedures. So you have to have all of these. But anytime you see a single solution that says just close the borders, then it's not anchored on sufficient analysis. And that means that it could endanger the economy that closes the border much more than it ever set out thinking.
And that was Obi Ezekwesili, former Nigerian Education Minister.
On to something else. We now take you to Gambia, which is heading for a political showdown between President Adama Barrow and his main political rival. In 2016, the coalition that ensured Barrow's election agreed that he would serve a transitional president organizing elections after free Euros.
Now, that three-year period ends this December, but President Barrow says he will complete his five-year constitutional term. This stalemate is having a negative effect on the country's tourism. From Banjul, here's our correspondent Omar Wali.
The pronouncement by Usainu Jabo, leader of the United Democratic Party UDP, ends months of speculations on the future of President Adama Barrow. However, it is also seen as a contradictory coming from the former vice president who initially asked Barrow to complete his full five-year term. Esa Damfa, heir to President Barrow, says the said agreement is unconstitutional.
The UDP urges all the parties to the coalition agreement, and particularly the principal beneficiary of the coalition agreement, that is His Excellency President Adama Barrow, to be faithful.
Already the UDP is calling on Adama Barrow to comply and step down in December. The standoff is having a negative effect on tourism. The Minister of Tourism says many tourists have cancelled their trips due to security concerns because of the ongoing dispute. But what do the ordinary Gambians make of the current political stalemate?
Before UDP, I think Barrow worked with a team. That is the coalition. And this step down or step aside was coalition agreement with Barrow. That 3 years, Barrow will step aside. Somebody will come and complete the mission of the coalition. I don't think UDP just jumped to say that President Barrow should step aside. Before UDP, the agreement was from somewhere else. If I'm Adama Barrow, I'm going to respect the 3 years and grab the world honor.
We're looking at a man who, when he was in power, when he was the vice president of this country, he was in support of the whole 5 years and his followers. But then now that he's no longer the vice president, he is against the whole 5 years and he wants President Adama Barrow to step down. I feel like that's contradicting his statement.
Will the pressure coming from the opposition force President Barrow to step down?
President Barrow is not stepping down. President Barrow is continuing with his mandate to 2021. That's the reasons behind that. The coalition itself, since the inception, they have a program that they offered the president to undertake those programs. That's our reform programs. And also, the coalitions they met earlier on this year to review the agreement, you know, the initial agreement was not signed.
The Independent Electoral Commission says it will not organize elections until 2021. The man at the center of the controversy, President Barrow, says his critics must wait until 2021 when elections will be held.
And that is our correspondent from Banjul, Omar Wali.
And on our Facebook page, we ask you, what do you make of this? According to Santan Farah, Barrow wants to perpetuate himself in power, even though the country is currently stagnant. Well, we thank you so much for your comments. Keep them coming in. You're listening to DW's Africa Link. Once more, I am Mimi Mefo.
And I am Michael Oti. We are broadcasting live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And on our Facebook page, I see you, Kofi Pa. You say that you are listening from Ghana. And also, Mejang JC says they are listening from the United Arab Emirates. Farouk Hussein Farouk says that here is some political drama coming from Gambia. And he's talking about a story we covered earlier. So keep your comments coming in and we will read them when we have the time. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes.
25 euros after the opening of Rwanda's International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, that is the ICTR, many still have mixed feelings about its legacy.
There's nothing that one can use to open up a case against anyone. Most of their sources were the genocidaires.
And as the weekend approaches, we'll also be bringing you some major sports updates.
But first, Malawi's agro-based economy is head for doom after the United States banned import of tobacco products from the country. The Customs and Border Protection, the CBP, issued the withhold release order last week, saying the crop is produced using forced labor in the country.
Tobacco contributes about 65% of foreign exchange to Malawi. So many farmers fear that this new decision could affect their livelihood. George Mwango's report is now presented by Josie Mahachi.
In Malawi, like neighboring Zambia, Mozambique and Tanzania, the rainy season is here to take farmers to their various fields. Reason why? Maria Kandonje, mother of four, has started preparing tobacco nurseries and farms as downpour looks promising. Kandoje, 45, a Form 2 secondary school dropout, lives in Jali, Zomba, Malawi, which has more tobacco farmers. With news that the United States has banned tobacco and its products on grounds that the crop is produced using forced child labor, Kandonje says her future, likewise, those of commercial farmers, look bleak.
If my children help me to order tobacco nurseries or plant the leaf until I sell it, it is just their regard for parenthood. But I should admit that in big estates, child labor exists, and you cannot control it because there is no policy that bans child labor in Malawi at the moment. Even the tobacco tenancy bill is still being drafted in parliament. So government has a huge task to deal with child labor, not only in tobacco, but other industries such as tea and sugar as well.
Children of less than 16 years are employed to work in tobacco or tea estates in Malawi. Most of them have dropped out of school. While the Tobacco Control Commission, TCC, is supposed to deter tobacco estate owners from employing children, there is no law in Malawi prohibiting the practice. Employers Consultative Association of Malawi, Ekama Tobacco Control Commission, and International Labour Organization recently developed a tenancy labour bill for approval so as to end child labour. But as Charles Manyetera, a labour expert in Malawi, says, it is yet to see the light of day.
The tenancy labor bill was drafted some time back, but again, you have to look at the nature of the tenancy. It's coming back from the Tangata system. And our neighboring countries like Zambia, Zimbabwe, there's no tenancy. And again, we look at the tenancy, it provides a loophole where children might be trafficked.
A University of Malawi business scholar, Mercy Piri, has since cast doubt whether Malawi's economic woes would be solved soon if it insists on promoting tobacco.
We used to say it brings 70% of the total foreign exchange earnings, but look now. Growers are lobbed. Think of the anti-smoking lobby, the World Health Organization, WHO. Do you think tobacco is still the future? The answer is no.
The order against tobacco from Malawi was issued after a law firm in the United Kingdom announced that almost 2,000 tobacco tenant farmers, including hundreds of children, are taking legal action against British American Tobacco, BAT, accusing them of child labor and unjust enrichment.
That report by George Mahango, presented by Josie Mahachi.
25 years after the opening of the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda in Arusha, Tanzania, to prosecute suspects who committed genocide in Rwanda in 1994, for many survivors and Rwandans in general, it leaves behind a bag of mixed feelings. Although the tribunal officially closed its operation by the end of 2015, it had indicted 93 people, sentenced 61, and acquitted 14. But many suspects are still at large.
For the period it was in existence, it was in constant friction with the Rwandese Patriotic Front, RPF, the ruling party in Rwanda, with some prosecutors like the Italian Carla Del Ponte accusing RPF of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity and calling for the tribunal to prosecute members of the ruling RPF. Alice Ngarambi reports from Kigali.
Tom Ndahiro, a renowned researcher on genocide and genocide denial and a member of Interdisciplinary Genocide Studies Center, tells me that the tribunal's success outweighs its failures.
It was able to prosecute key figures in the criminal enterprise of the genocide against the Tutsi. And in so doing, it managed to gather a lot of evidence, which were presented as exhibits, had several testimonies from factual witnesses and from expert witnesses, which remain valuable.
About the confrontations between the RPF government and the tribunal, especially the tribunal's prosecutor, Del Ponte, Ndahiro tells me that the prosecutor's allegations were unfounded and unacceptable.
The ICTR, and in particular Carla Del Ponte, assigned three investigators to carry out investigations on the crimes purportedly committed by members of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. But this is, and they produced their report work document. But there's nothing that one can use to open up a case against anyone. And on top of that, most of their sources were the genociders.
Although the ICTR had a clear mandate to bring to book genocide perpetrators as defined by the United Nations, Ndahiro adds that if indeed there were crimes committed by RPF, they were individual in nature and not sanctioned by any individual.
If she had individual accusations who were members of RPF, could have investigated that and tried them. Some files of individuals were transferred from the ICTR to Rwanda. They were tried, they were acquittals, and they were convictions. So that one is not true.
For Olivier Tuyisenge, a 24-year-old poet who was not even born when the tribunal was established, believes that from what he saw, the local genocide courts known as Gacaca achieved in Rwanda in a short time, ICTR also tried to deliver justice for the big shots.
If the tribunal was not set up, genocide big shots would have walked free. The tribunal didn't have the capacity at the time to rebuild and at the same time prosecute these perpetrators who were all over the world.
However, there are people in Rwanda who believe, irrespective of all the successes the court achieved, Del Ponte could have been right, and there are reasons for investigating the ruling party as well.
As a Rwandan and a person who believes in fair justice, I think the biggest shortcomings is the fact that it was not able to prosecute even the people from the ruling party who are alleged to have committed also crimes.
Talking sport.
And talking about sports, Mimi, this weekend we have another exciting weekend for Bundesliga. We've got Hertha Berlin facing up against Leipzig after Leipzig's spectacular win, 8-0.
That's
a huge margin, Mimi.
Certainly. Let's see what happens this weekend. It's going to be a crucial one, of course, for Hertha Berlin after they got just 1 point in their last three Bundesliga matches. South Africans are equally recalling the strength of unity after Springboks win the Rugby World Cup. I spoke to DW's Kai Damba, who is bracing for live commentaries of the Bundesliga games here at DW. He starts by telling me what we should be looking out for.
Leipzig is coming in very hot, having won their last three matches. One of them was in the DFB Pokal, then that 8-0 win over Mainz in the Bundesliga, and the 2-0 win over Zenit St. Petersburg in the Champions League. So they're sitting in third place right now, just 4 points behind Mönchengladbach. You'll always have to look out for Timo Werner up top, who is second in the league in goals scored. And the team is fun to watch up front as well, tying Bayern Munich for the most goals scored in the league with 25. Now, Hertha Berlin is looking a little shaky, losing in the Berlin Derby to Union Berlin last weekend, but they have not been in European competition this year, so they've had all week to train, all week to prepare. They want to leave the 11th place spot that they're in, and if they want to do that, they're going to have to create more chances. They've taken the second fewest shots in the league this year.
And I guess it's going to be very exciting weekend if that happens. And now a lot is going on with Bayern Munich after former manager Niko Kovac left. Can we know more about what's happening exactly?
You can absolutely say that again. If you know Bayern Munich, it's trophies, 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 yes, with an S, or nothing. So Bayern Munich right now is in fourth place, and it was time for Kovac to go after the 5-1 thumping in Frankfurt over the weekend. Right now, the Bavarians have put Hans-Dieter Flick in Kovac's spot until they find the right man to take over permanently. Rumors are flying around Munich. Some say it's going to be Jose Mourinho or the legendary Arsenal ringleader Arsene Wenger, but nobody will know until someone signs on the dotted line on the right form. You know how Germans love those paperworks.
Yeah.
But they really could not have picked a much worse time to try to find someone new right now, because they're playing in Der Klassiker against Borussia Dortmund in Munich. And that match seems to always decide the Bundesliga title this decade. But if Bayern fans are looking for some good news, there's plenty to chew on. Dortmund has not won in Munich since April 2014, and Bayern Munich has outscored the black and yellow 22-3 in Bundesliga play at the Allianz Arena since that match.
Now, it's always a weekend of sports, many sports happenings around the world, but we are particularly interested in what's going on in South Africa. There is celebration after Springboks tournament victory. What is particularly important about this trophy?
So this was the first time that South Africa won the Rugby World Cup since 2007, and this is their third title. That means that they've tied New Zealand for the most Rugby World Cup titles, and also means that New Zealand would not be the only nation to win the tournament this decade. But more importantly, it shows how far the country has come since apartheid. They had a black captain for the first time in Siya Kolisi. He didn't beat his chest. He knew it was the team's job, not just his, to bring home the Webb Ellis Cup. And my goodness gracious, they did it in style. Just absolutely fantastic performance by this team to bring it home for the third time. And the entire nation is just so thrilled with it.
And of course, we can see how they've been touring South Africa's major cities just to celebrate that trophy.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Kai.
My pleasure.
Of course, that is Kai Dambak here at DW speaking to me about the rugby trophy, which is now being used as a unifying factor in South Africa. It is also a reminder of the country's journey during the apartheid period.
And also remember that Kai Dambak will be on tomorrow bringing you the Bundesliga commentary live on our Facebook page. So make a date with him. Now, earlier in this bulletin, we spoke to you about the Rwanda and how its International Criminal Tribunal, the ICTR, otherwise known as Gacaca, has achieved 25 years. And there are lots of reactions to this particular story. Mimi, we have some comments.
Certainly. Mario Costa, for instance, says that these initiatives created by the West have proven to be very ineffective in Africa, as they do not consider the anthropological aspect of it. Things are not as straightforward as Western nations think, and look at the amount spent to try and sentence 61 individuals, $2 billion.
Really and shocked. Yes, yeah, indeed. That's quite a long comment. Some of these comments are very, very important to ensure that we engage with our viewers. And Indo Teim also says that the only problem is that it's only partially functional in Rwanda. There are many countries that have sent troops unilaterally into other nations to commit atrocities with impunity. And they need some of these organizations to also set up and look into them.
And Wilson Bill says that the ICTR is an instrument to cow the African ruling class who failed to do so by master bidding, when in reality they installed these puppets in the first place.
And we go on to our Facebook page. Toot Bjork sure says that the South Sudanese peace process should have happened last week. And we hope that the two leaders will be able to work things out. So this is on the story that we covered earlier on the South Sudanese peace process. We appreciate your comments on our Facebook page. Mimi, have you got any?
We have a lot of people. Just to acknowledge it, so many people who have been live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We have Lucky Jalo. We thank you so much. Keep your comments coming in. We shall be reading them subsequently. Thank you so much for listening. I am Mimi Mefo.
And I am Michael Oti. Have a great weekend.
DW. Made for Minds.